Run up on you quick, what up you with us? Don't trip, you gon' get your money.
You are tuned in to the Watch Man, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
This is 50 Cent, do you need us? Don't trip, stunting at my yellow lamb.
Kendall, Esquire, please break down the 360 deal and its consequences for artists and the business.
360 deals, I mean, the concept of 360 is it's circular, it's all, it's encompassing. The evolution of the 360 deal came about within the past 5 years, I would say. And it came about as a direct result of the fact that record companies were losing money. They've been losing money for the last 5 to 10 years. Single, sometimes double-digit declines in sales and revenue every single year. So as a result of that, the record companies, in order to survive, began to look at how can we, one, cut expenses, so a lot of staff layoffs, a lot of consolidation, a lot of mergers, a lot of roster cuts with their artists, slashing of budgets for recording, slashing of promotional and marketing budgets that they would have normally spent on lavish parties or radio promotion. So that's one way to boost the bottom line, you cut expenses. The other way, obviously, is you increase income. They weren't increasing income by the increase of sales because sales of the physical CDs were declining as sales on the internet were exploding and they hadn't yet captured the opportunities for monetizing internet sales. So they started looking to the artist. And they were saying to the artists, particularly new artists, that they were investing hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars in developing new careers. And they were saying, you know what, we're spending a lot of money on you. Nobody's ever heard of you or really cared about buying anything from you before we spent risk capital. But we don't want to be limited more to just getting revenue from sales of records. So you're going out as a result of our risk, our investment, and you are now having a career that can then bring you great financial rewards from touring, from publishing, from the writing of your material and the ownership of your copyrights, for successful gold and platinum artists, obviously. Merchandising is a very lucrative area. Film and television opportunities come, book deals come. So what the record companies kind of did slowly but surely, one by one, and now almost all the majors are doing it, and quite a few of the significant independents are doing it. They're saying, we will invest the money as we always have. We will continue to have the same contractual relationship and economic and financial arrangements that we always had as it relates to the sale of your records. However, now we want a piece of the pie that you're enjoying from our risk capital. And therefore, the record companies are demanding a percentage profit participation of varying percentages. Could be as low as 5%, could be as high as 25%, could be on gross, could be on net. That's all subject to negotiation. But the essence is that they are now sharing as income partners in all the various areas related to the entertainment industry that an artist is now receiving. It's very lopsided because a brand new artist who doesn't have a sales or track record or history of making money and they're not successful yet has very little of any leverage. The only leverage you really have coming in the door is if other companies are interested simultaneously in hiring and signing you, then you can do a bidding war and you can go then one company against the other for the best terms that you can squeeze out of them. If that's not the case, and that's only the case in a small fraction of the time, the new artist has very little leverage. And for an attorney who represents the creative talent side of the equation, it hurts, it sucks. It's just like, you know, because when you look at the numbers, what's really happening is the artist is getting squeezed and squeezed and squeezed. And at the end of the day, yeah, the record company is investing risk capital. They've always been doing that, and only now they're looking to share in other areas because they're losing money. But traditionally, the artist has been in a studio. They're the ones that have to go out and they have to work. They have to promote the record. They have to, you know, stay up late, get up early, get on a bus, sleep in hotel rooms all around the world, eat bad food. So they're the ones that actually have to physically work the record, be out on tour, do all the kinds of interviews and promotional activities, all of which are really unpaid most of the time, to bring value to that record and to that song. And now you have a record company saying, pay me 25 or even 20% of your net profits from touring. You have a manager who's saying, I want 15 to 20% of your gross. You have a booking agency who's taking 10% of your gross from the booking. You may have a business manager. If you're an established artist, you do have a business manager who is probably getting 3 to 5% of your gross of all the money that comes in. Your attorney also is on a percentage basis quite often, but not all the time. But when we are, sometimes it's the same as a business manager, 5% cut. So by the time you finish on a typical date, a live engagement, an artist may be paying out as much as 70% of the earnings that they're making from that gig, which means they take home 30%, which is not a significant sum of money if, you know, you're not making $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $100,000 a night. The 360 relationship will last for the time of the deal. So if they're doing a 4, 5, 6 album deal, then the 360 and all the other provisions that are in the contract, because it's just one of many provisions, are going to apply typically for the entire length of the contract. Now, however, as you go from album to album, assuming you're going from album to album because you're successful, that success is going to give you the leverage that you didn't have when you first came in as a new artist. And that leverage that you now have to renegotiate for a improved deal will probably give you a little bit better participation on the 360 side. I doubt very seriously if it will completely eliminate it, because, you know, once the foot is in the door, it doesn't necessarily get completely removed. You only remove one toe at a time. So what will happen is, you know, you go gold, you go platinum. Instead of 15% participation, you may be successful in reducing that to a half or a quarter, and that puts more money in your pocket. You may be able to put certain benchmarks and triggers in so that they only participate when a certain sales level is achieved on the record to show that they're really pushing the record and getting behind it financially to support its promotion. There are a lot of other nuances and things that you can inject into the clause to make it a little bit more palpable, but absent the leverage and the success, you're kind of stuck for the ride.
Knowledge, wisdom, and understanding only on the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee program.
One more time.
Knowledge, wisdom, and understanding only on the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee program.
Esquire. I think that's what the ESQ stands for, right? You had it right there. Okay, so now you have the context for what I'm about to get into regarding Vevo, this joint partnership between Sony Music, Universal, and YouTube. Now, I'm passionate about these subjects. I'm trying to move many of us in the hip-hop genre beyond, I should say, you know, just the gossip and celebrity chatter, into understanding what really dictates a power move. And I'm into all this stuff with Beanie Siegel and Jay-Z and 50 Cent. I enjoy that. But at the end of the day, there's forces that dictate, shape the environment that all four of those individuals, Nas, Jay-Z, Beanie Siegel, and 50 Cent, operate in. And they all know that, but, you know, they're not necessarily going to tell you that. So that's why I'm here with this hip-hoppreneur movement to try to help develop a new class of politically conscious, talented, and business savvy, internationally global-minded entrepreneurs and artists. It's not enough to just be politically conscious and you spit it in your lyrics and you're quoting black power leaders of the 60s and 70s. That's nice, but if you don't know how to set up your own label or maneuver through a contract, you're not a revolutionary at all. You're just a rhetorician. Did I just make up a word? Rhetorician. You're just words. So we'll get in more in depth in exactly what I mean when I talk about a hip-hoppreneur. But if you're in the game, if you're in the industry, if you're trying to make money right now, if you are a signed artist, if you are running an independent label, and I have all of that listening to my show, if you're a staffer, hanging on at a major label, you need to look at the symbol I just put up, Vevo. This thing may have more to do with whether you survive or thrive or not than any other new development in the industry since Napster. Okay, so you go run, tell somebody, go get somebody if they are a industry professional, struggling artist, aspiring mogul. I'm breaking down what's about to happen on December 8th. Okay, this is at allhiphop.com. I write. Damn, it's a hot beat. Hold on. about to start dancing up in here as I read. Woo. Damn, hold on. Getting distracted. Hold on one more time. You about to get this.
Knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. Only on the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee program.
Okay, here we go. December 8th. Could it be another significant date by which the music industry will mark the future calendar of its history as a triumph or a tragedy? On December 8th, Vivo, a music video service partnership between Vivendi, Universal Music, and Sony Music, and powered by Google's YouTube, is launched. It is the music industry's effort to market their visual content similar to the way Hulu markets shows. On that date, all videos by artists under contract to these music labels will be available only on Vivo websites or sites that utilize Vivo players. The videos will be higher quality than those currently on YouTube. Artists, managers, and publicists in recent weeks have been encouraged to transfer all video streams from YouTube over to Vivo's site. They've even been asked to hand over the YouTube login information so that Vivo can more quickly transfer the videos over to the site. Awesome. People are in for a rude awakening December 8th. When y'all go to YouTube, it will be a new era. This is serious. I really encourage you to spread word of what I wrote. You don't have to agree with what I wrote, but no one really has commented on this issue the way that we were blessed to break this down. So what does this all mean for the future of the music economy, the internet, artists, fans, and consumers? Let's take them one at a time. First, the music economy. Vivo came about largely because of the determination of the major record labels, and there are only four left, Universal, Sony, EMI, and Warner, to get their hands on more income streams as music sales continue to decline since the demise of the CD. The labels are trying everything from making 360 deals mandatory in contracts with new artists, which could give them a percentage of revenue previously off limits, things like endorsements, merchandise income, and concert appearance fees, to becoming more aggressive in the licensing fees they charge websites to play their music and videos. Vivo is an attempt by the industry to make money from something it never could. Music videos that were previously only used for promotional purposes, given away to record stores, or shown on video channels to make artists more visible and popular. In either case, the goal was the same, to sell more records, but from charging advertisers dollars to associate themselves with the playing of videos. That's what they're doing with Vivo. With Vivo, the goal is not to make money from selling records, but from charging advertisers dollars to associate themselves with the playing of videos. With YouTube's nearly 400 million users and a YouTube channel that receives nearly 4 billion views, Universal Music Group, UMG, recognized that there is a considerable amount of money to be made through online advertising. With Vivo, it is changing its previous business model of making money from charging licensing fees to sites that were attracting viewers by playing its videos and sharing in the ad revenue. The record labels believe that YouTube is not skilled enough at attracting advertisers, and Vivo is an effort to have the best of both worlds. YouTube's traffic and technology, which will power Vivo, married with the record label's ability to attract advertisers willing to pay higher rates to them. Anthony Bruno of Billboard magazine explained it well earlier this year when he wrote, UMG, Universal Music Group executive VP of the label's ELABS division, Rio Karaev, earlier this year told Billboard that advertisers pay an average of only $3 to $8 for every 1,000 views, known as CPMs, that their ads receive. While that has resulted in tens of millions in revenue, UMG and other labels would like an ad rate on par with the CPMs that TV and movies command online, which is upwards of $25 to $40 per CPM. The idea behind the Vivo plan is to create a scarcity of advertising inventory for the purpose of driving up rates. To date, labels licensed their music videos to multiple online services such as YouTube, Yahoo, MTV, and others in return for a cut of the advertising revenue sold around these videos. With all these services competing for many of the same advertisers, simple supply and demand drove down the advertising rates even as the views rose. So even though the amount of viewership was increasing, the advertising rates that the record labels were able to command went down because there were too many services competing for the same ad dollars. The hope is that Vivo will command these rates by creating a single point of negotiation for advertisers who wish to buy space on music videos. Both Vivo and YouTube will host the videos, and both companies will split the profits from the ads they sell around them. And I write, yes, Vivo means more consolidation to an industry that many feel already has too much. Now let's look at the next factor. How does this affect the internet? Vivo continues the shrewd business strategy, or the big boy gangsterism, depending upon who you talk to, of the major labels muscling their way in on technological platforms and networks. This happened with MySpace, it happened with Napster, and it happened with IME. By threatening to sue them or actually taking legal action, and then forcing or inviting these platforms or networks to settle or partner with the label through licensing arrangements and joint ventures, this obviously makes many cringe. But what all of these episodes expose is the continuing challenge of internet entrepreneurs to monetize or make money through web traffic. Facebook and Twitter continue to struggle with this, and Vivo emerged in part because the enormously popular YouTube, while making progress, continues to struggle to make more than it loses. Many believe YouTube was forced into the Vivo partnership because it simply could not afford to pay the licensing fees the record labels were charging. Some say that the high licensing fees will eventually be a factor in forcing MTV and AOL to join Vivo. Damn, I mean, this is so heavy, man. A top Wall Street analyst, Credit Suisse's Spencer Wang, created shockwaves earlier this year with analysis he published. And this is another reason why I beg music moguls, artists, and even activists to read financial and investment materials as much as they read industry and celebrity gossip blogs. That brought some harsh realism to the dreamy worldview most of us have of YouTube. Barron's Magazine's Tech Trader Daily blogger Eric Savitz broke it down well when he wrote on April 3rd, 2009. Here's the thing. The site YouTube, by Wang's estimates, continues to lose an enormous amount of money. He calculates that YouTube in 2009 can generate $240.9 million in revenue through a combination of homepage ads, in-video overlaid ads, banner ads, sponsored videos, and sponsored links. That would be about a 20% increase from the $200 million in revenues he estimates YouTube generated in 2008. But he also estimates that the cost of running the site, the bandwidth, the content acquisition and licensing, and other costs this year will be about $711.3 million. Ergo, he estimates the site this year will lose a whopping $470.6 million. So everybody's talking about, you know, get on YouTube, YouTube's popular, this, that, and the other. But look, the bottom line is YouTube's losing money. Facebook, Twitter, not making money. Wang said that while the losers appear, or the losses appear staggering, there is some hope. The key, he says, will be to increase the percentage of videos monetized. There certainly is room for improvement, and he calculates that the site is now generating an average of 0.4 cents per video watched, or $2.23 per unique visitor per month. What is becoming clear is that while these entrepreneurs are successful at creating the technological platforms, this is me writing now, Cedric Muhammad, and networks that people use to socialize, dialogue, and share, they are not so good at creating the content that the people want to socialize around, dialogue about, and share with each other. Until the internetpreneurs figure this out and become content producers, I say there will always be a need for or a dependency on the major corporations who still seem to have a monopoly on generating what people want to see and hear the most. The smaller size American music industry entrepreneurs and activists concerned about the growing dominance of certain companies would do well to complement their blogging and rallying with more content creation, including signing established artists and lobbying to influence the politicians that make laws that favor their larger competitors, and by internationalizing their playbook. The real growth opportunities in the music industry are overseas. Just ask Warner Music, whose revenue just dropped 9.4%, with overall music sales down 15% in America, but rising 16% internationally. So while sales are down 15% in America, they're rising 16% internationally. I'm going to let some of that sink in. Send in your comments. You have any thoughts on this? I couldn't think of a more important subject to build on for anyone getting in the business now, or someone trying to figure out how to navigate this transition that we're going through. There's a historic continuum with artists being overwhelmed by technological change, demographic change, industry models of making money changing. One of the reasons why artists end up broke, the other reason is the mentality that artists have that you all know I've talked about. Artists is dumb, is what my mentor told me. We'll be right back. Cedric Muhammad, Black Coffee Program, December 2nd, 2009. Go tell somebody we're talking intelligently about the future of the music business. December 2nd, 2009. Talking about Vivo. December 8th next week. Is it doomsday? Or is this the direction that the music industry and all entrepreneurs can go in? You know, I take the disposition that, you know, you don't have to concede that everything a corporation or a multinational is doing is bad. What I see with Vivo is, aside from the consolidation, and there is a movement underway to control internet access. We'll deal with this maybe next week as it relates to Google. Why Google may be the most influential company in the world when you really break it down. But there's a divide between individuals who have access to the internet and can create platforms and those that have the creative content. So the corporations have the creative content. Now, there's reasons why independent moguls and entrepreneurs are not able to create stars past a certain level of popularity. It's because their inability to market and control platforms that have big enough people. But that's changed with the internet. But what the internet has done is it has popular, what websites have done is they have popularized stars that are under contract to other people. There's nothing stopping YouTube from having its own record label. You feel me? Or Facebook or Twitter. So as I said, and this may be one of the more important sentences. If you notice, I've been able to say community, right? Community sentences. This was one of the more important sentences in what I wrote. I write, what is becoming clear is that while these entrepreneurs are successful at creating the technological platforms and networks that people use to socialize, dialogue, and share, and I'm talking about, without saying it, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, they are not so good at creating the content that the people want to socialize around, dialogue about, and share with each other. If YouTube or Google signed Jay-Z or Beanie Siegel, hell, if they signed Cedric Muhammad, then they would have the best of both worlds. They would have content that the people want and the platform where the people are. If you don't have content or a reason, if you don't own what you're sharing, what you're dialoguing about, and what you're socializing around, then you are dependent upon those that do. And that's what's happening with Vivo. YouTube had the people, the record labels had the content. He who owns the content is now calling the tune. YouTube was not the stronger party. Google was not the stronger party in this instance, because it was the record labels that had what YouTube wanted or lacked. And that was the videos. Okay, so I hope I made that clear. Now, what I'm saying is all the activists that want to just continue to protest inordinate corporate influence, you're hustling backwards. You are running the Green Bay Packer offense from 1969, sweep left, sweep right, in the era of the flea flicker, and the Wildcat. It's a new day. You have to update the playbook, activists and independent entrepreneurs in the music industry. There's nothing stopping you from signing talent and building a web platform where the people are. So I say here that they also could learn or use an important business lesson about how value is created where information is concerned. Years ago, I discussed this with my friend, economist Reuven Brenner, the REPAP chair in economics at McGill University's Faculty of Management. Reuven Brenner explained to me that there are five ways to classify information. You do it by location, category, alphabet, time, and hierarchy. And I say in the world of hip hop, as we're big on acronyms like KRS-One, knowledge reigns supreme over nearly everyone, and Wu-Tang, witty, unpredictable talent, and natural game. We can remember location, category, alphabet, time, and hierarchy as LOCATH, L-O-C-A-T-H. Location, time, and alphabet are mechanical, so to speak. And as an entrepreneur, you really can't add value through those methods. The alphabet is the alphabet. Time is time. Location is location. You can play around with it and make some money here and there. Don't get me wrong. But the real value is in how you categorize and the hierarchy in which you put information. Like, just to give you an example, BlackElectorate.com has stood the test of time because of the way that we categorize and put information in hierarchy. Those four sections of the website, that's what gives the website its uniqueness. Four categories in the order in which we place those stories. This is the science of business right now. I'm breaking this down. I'm not giving away any trade secrets. I just want people to understand why there's going to be a lot of losers. There's a lot more losers than winners in this changing music industry. So, category and hierarchy are more open to human innovation. And the big value an entrepreneur or business can add is by innovating or building something that is unique through hierarchy and the way we are able to help people choose or prioritize. So at BlackElectric.com, we help people choose and prioritize what matters most in the news. So in my mind, the value that Vivo adds is that it categorizes and places in hierarchies for the masses something that was previously unavailable to them in high quality and in an organized fashion, and that's the music video. This is one of the reasons why a subscription music service like Rhapsody is valuable, because of how it categorizes and places in hierarchy music across genres and eras in unique ways. But subscription services like Napster and Rhapsody probably will not survive the tidal wave coming next decade from Europe in the form of a popular free service called Spotify. Well, are you all up on Spotify? Spotify? It's a European music service. It surpasses Rhapsody and Napster in the ability to categorize and place music in hierarchies with an incredible search engine. That's the next one coming, Spotify. S-P-O-T-I-F-Y. Because music videos have never been available to the public in an organized fashion, even music industry professionals have never been satisfied by how they receive music videos through servicing companies. And because Vivo promises to organize them in unique ways, it does offer something unique. If it does so while maintaining the sense of community produced at YouTube, it will hit a real home run. Now, what does this mean for artists or artists? What does this mean for artists? I write in my allhiphop.com hiphoppreneur commentary. Yeah, I had to brand it. As Reuven Brenner explained in a 2005 op-ed, The Thieving Ants and the Serenading Grasshoppers Toward a Legal Solution for Downloading Music and Movies, which we have a link to at BlackElectorate.com, Reuven wrote, "The more entrepreneurial music artists will change their business models, using their talent as loss leader and leveraging it toward clothing like Puffy and J-Lo, jewelry and perfume lines and children books like Madonna, amusement parks like Dolly Parton, and others will work harder and perform live more like Celine Dion with her Las Vegas shows. New technology always brings about commercial opportunities, though it requires occasionally drastic restructuring and much resistance." as was the case with Napster. And I wrote about a way 10 years ago that these artists could have really mobilized and made a lot of money off of Napster without leaving their record labels. But as was the case with Napster, Vivo arrives with most artists and their managers asleep at the wheel. In hip hop, with the exception of a few artists, including 50 Cent with ThisIs50.com and Joe Budden, JoeBuddenTV.com and Soulja Boy with his YouTube page, few artists seem to grasp the amount of money that is awaiting them online through video content and community.
Cedric Muhammad.